Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello there. Welcome to another episode of Star Wars Minute. It's your daily podcast where we analyze, scrutinize, and celebrate The Last Jedi one Snoke minute at a time. I'm Alex Robinson from alexrobinson.fun.
I'm Pete the Retailer from petetheretailer.com.
Hello there. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, writer, podcaster, and recreational hood remover.
Welcome back, Joseph.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Wilrow Hood? Have you gotten, did you get rid of him?
Love that scene when Luke flips down Wilrow Hood. What?
He flips him for real.
Today we are talking about minute 99 of Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. Minute 99 starts off with Rey telling Snoke that he underestimates Ben and her. And it ends a minute later with Snoke pushing Rey away, levitating her about 10 feet off the ground, something like that. About 3 meters for you, those of you keeping score in Europe and elsewhere. Yes, this is where we talked about it briefly yesterday, but this is where we get a great example of a sarcastic Snoke. Being like, oh, have you seen in my apprentice's mind that he's weak and that he's tempted? It's great.
It is. Yeah, I love the push up, the close up of his face, you know, because it would have been a great line from afar, but just that like straight on shot. Oh, it's like he's being goosed slowly.
Who is better at this sarcastic? This kind of seems like the equivalent of, oh, I'm sorry, your friends are going to find the shield quite. which sarcasm is who's better at it?
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think Snoke is a little bit better at it because Palpatine, like almost everything he does, you know, he's subtle enough to, you know, destroy the entire Republic and the Jedi. But then after that, he has a hard time containing himself. Subtlety is not his thing after a while there, you know, and especially by Return of the Jedi.
I'm imagining now that like, we established yesterday that we didn't think Snoke knew he was a puppet, but I like the idea of Snoke being sarcastic to Palpatine. Like he's a bratty, like a sullen high school teen. And like, he's like, oh, why are you like this? And then, oh, well, I guess you made me this way, father. You know, like totally being a jerk.
Right.
Oh, fine. I'll follow your orders. I, Snoke, will just walk out of this room, which you can't do hanging from a claw. Yeah, I know we're not talking about Rise of Skywalker, but that's one of the things I like about Rise of Skywalker, and I know it's controversial, that Palpatine is done with games. He sends, you know, a message out to the entire galaxy saying, I'm coming for you. I'm the Sith. It's like, I love that it starts with the Phantom Menace, and the Rise of Skywalker is the blatant menace of like, I am broadcasting that I am coming for you all.
Yeah,
the overt menace.
Yes.
Well, before the Snoke stuff, we do get the end of Rey. I had the one note. It's not worth going back for, but I it amused me that I picture, you know, at the end of yesterday we had, you know, you underestimate Skywalker, and the finisher was like, and Ben Solo, and me, and I wrote, and this ashtray and this paddle game and this lamp. You underestimate this lamp, which is that's just what I pictured Ray doing here. So,
yeah,
and she's Chewbacca. A
but then it is interesting that in his perfect. We talked about Snoke acting all Palpatine-y, which. There's our cocktail. Yeah, the Palpatine. You make it without a shaker or a glass.
It is not good.
No,
it is not. It's fun party trick, but it's not a good drink. The Palpatine.
Oh, I'm afraid your Palpatine drink is going to be quite terrible.
Right. Yeah.
When it arrives.
But he direct quotes him, in a sense. He says, "Young fool." Which I'm picturing, would that be kind of a like a 50s vocal harmony or maybe early 60s kind of rock and roll song? You know, fool. Young fool is kind of pining about all the things that that Rey or Luke Skywalker are doing wrong.
Yeah, we might need to ask our mutual friend Tony Thaxton to put that together. And especially if it's a 1950s kind of thing with the oohs, that he could use the actual oohs and ohs from Palpatine and Snoke.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Ooh.
Young fool.
How do you, I meant to bring this up last minute as well. There's so much in this whole throne room scene that feels like it is meant to evoke the throne room scene in Return of the Jedi, right? Mm-hmm. There's the elevator shot. There's the cuffs coming off. Mm-hmm. I think Rian Johnson is way too aware for that to be a coincidence. It feels like he wants you to be thinking, what's the Return of the Jedi throne room scene doing in the middle of the second movie?
Right.
I was curious if you guys felt that way, liked it, didn't like that.
I mean, at the time, I was just appreciating where it was going. I wasn't thinking about the larger arc. In retrospect, in kind of, you know, considering it after, it does seem a little, again, it fits in with my thoughts from yesterday about like, oh, wait, it seems like we have kind of two parts of something and not a third, or that the thing that I just learned recently, which I don't remember where we got it, but that, you know, originally when it was Trevorrow doing the third part, then Rian Johnson was going to write at least the outline for the third part. And so then when that got canceled and kind of drawn back, then he blended a lot of the stuff from his proposed third act into the second act, which could be why it feels that way. But also, I don't know, I think that again, I wish I could kind of erase all of those external prejudices and expectations from my mind and know nothing about the behind the scenes of this movie, know nothing about, you know, even know nothing about, you know, traditional kind of, you know, the Joseph Campbell kind of storytelling, you know, three act, that just be like, just let me appreciate this as it is coming into my eyes, which is, I think, what takes time and appreciation for this. That a lot of people are like, yeah, the first time I watched this movie, I didn't quite understand how I felt about it, which that's exactly how I was. Like, I think I liked that. There was a lot of good stuff, but I don't know did I like it? And then the more time goes on, the more stuff that I appreciate in it, the more I'm like, oh, that's really good.
Yeah. I think it really worked on me the first time I saw the film in particular, because like these are absolutely evoking the throne room scene, but the throne room scene kind of can't happen in the middle of the second film. Mm. So for me, it really worked to ultimately take me by surprise in such a pleasing way when he does die. But that's not the end of the problems, of course, you know?
Right.
So it worked for me.
Yeah, it does certainly, you know, we joke a lot about undermining expectations, but like putting that here, then you're like, well, now what are they going to do? And have that kind of like,
yeah,
where's the movie going? Which I guess could, see, now I'm like, my emotions are constantly developing on this, which is...
I can sense the conflict within you.
Yeah. It, which could be that, you know, exactly. Okay, like wherever you think it's going, let's wrap most of that up in the middle here. So then it's like, you don't know what to expect, because with a normal... I don't know, guys.
Well, here's something else we don't know.
I did not mean this within you yourself.
We get a close, intense close-up of Snoke's face, and I noticed his eyebrows, and he has little wisps of hair. on top of his bald head. It made me wonder, what was his hair like? Was there ever a young Snoke where he had a thick, lush head of hair? And what color was it, and what style did he keep it in? Or was he just cloned that way, and he's never had a thick head of hair? But does he think he had a thick head of hair at one point? And if so, how would he have styled it?
In that Rise of Kylo Ren comic book, he's got a weird hat, which is really, really fun. He's got a weird little hat. But I love the idea that he was cloned younger with hair, and that was like a pain in the ass on Exegol. Like, we have to keep updating the clones to really keep them up to date with Snoke's current appearance.
So it's like an efficiency thing. It's like, they should have made him like the medical droid that had no face from earlier in the film. Where it's just like, let's make him kind of blank and unassuming, like a blob, so that way it's easier for us to just get. We don't have to worry about details. So just make him like a vaguely formed blob,
or just like
a cube. He started out as just tall Charlie Brown.
Right, there you go.
I like to picture him having a stash in his younger days, experimenting with growing a stash.
What now?
Oh yeah,
picturing him with like a toupee too. That he wasn't like it wasn't like his hair was always kind of like this, and then he started like work like a Stan Lee kind of a thing where he's working with different designs.
Oh yeah, it's hard.
I like that a lot.
It's hard to take anyone seriously wearing a toupee, isn't it?
Luckily, I have very faulty wigdar, and so I don't. I never notice unless it's like obscenely obvious, unless it's just kind of, you know, like a completely different color plopped on top of, you know, it's like an old toupee. So it's like, you know, like a brown like nest sitting on top of a gray circle.
Yeah, I'm generally bad at wigdar too. And if your toupee is bad enough where I can tell you're wearing a toupee, then it's a really bad toupee. Like I should work at the toupee store where and I'm the ultimate judge in whether or not that don't even tell me it's a toupee store. Go, oh, here's this gentleman. Look at his shirt. What do you think? Looks pretty good.
Next door to the toupee store, every once in a while, they just open up a door and be like, hey, Alex, check this guy out. I'm like, what, is that a toupee? But all right, see you later.
That would be an amazing job to just be sitting in the back of a toupee store and just the door opens like, toupee or not?
Right.
Don't know. Yeah, I love Snoke's teeth, and I love the close up we get of Snoke's teeth. This time around, when I was watching it for this wonderful show, they really felt like they were illustrated by Robert Crumb in particular. Just like the way they were arranged, not quite right.
A lot of little cross hatching details in there.
Uh-huh. How much do you? Well, I was going to say, how much do you think it would cost to commission Crumb to draw Snoke? But he wouldn't. Like, I don't think there's enough. I think he's got everything that he needs. He's you know, playing the ukulele in France. Like, we don't need to. He doesn't want for anything. That there's no, like, you couldn't back up a Brinks truck and be like, can you draw Snoke? Like,
I just love the idea of Robert Crumb being in, like, an artist alley type situation. And people are coming up to him going, would you draw Captain Marvel fighting Mr. Fantastic?
We're going to draw a Moon Knight. Like, all of the above. Would love to see Crumb's take on Captain Marvel fighting Mr. Fantastic, Moon Knight, Snoke, definitely.
Moon Knight wearing pose jacket. Perfect.
There you go.
Now, who's over the cape or under the cape?
Who's... Oh, I think over the cape.
Right. So it's like sticking out beneath the bottom like a flare. Okay, I like it.
It's like a kid's sticker book where it's just a regular drawing of Moon Knight, and then you slap on a jacket, pose jacket sticker on top of it, and it doesn't fully quite match up. And it's...
I'm gonna go as pose jacket for Halloween.
Oh, there you go.
You won't see my face. It'll just be like a big jacket,
but oversized, so like it goes down to your feet, kind of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The who's the most unlikely artist that would still potentially be amenable to doing a commission of Snoke? Like, who's somebody that has no business drawing Snoke, and it would be really unusual to see them draw Snoke, but we could probably still get them to do a drawing of Snoke.
Ooh, wow. Who is... I don't have a plethora of modern artists at my mental fingertips. So right. I'm not sure.
Which could help, because then you can get like the people who were, you know, the people who are the hot artists when I was reading comics more might be a little bit less, you know, in demand now and might be more amenable to doing commissions of ridiculous Star Wars characters for money.
Oh, yeah. This is a great artist who probably wouldn't do this. But Bill Sienkiewicz, I would love to see his Snoke exploding everywhere illustration.
I feel like he does have a certain affinity for this kind of a thing. That might not be too off base.
Yeah, I feel like anyone who draws superhero comics would be like, sure, you know, whatever.
But I would want him to draw Snoke the moment that he is ripped apart by the Skywalker blade. So there's just limbs and viscera and flies.
Totally picturing that. And I also want that.
Let's tongue hanging out.
Maybe start a Snoke sketchbook, and then if conventions ever happen again, you could just bring it by. Could you bring around to various artists?
How much for a Snoke?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Another thing about Snoke's personal grooming while we're in there is his fingernails. When he hovers Rey over and he puts his giant hand on her face, and you can see he has like giant pointy nails.
Yeah,
which made me wonder if this is like the way his nails just naturally grow, or does he specifically cut them that way? So that does he use them as weapons? Why would he have those big pointy nails?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like the continuation of the Palpatine thing that for me is if you are operating at this like really high level of the dark side, that it does just kind of rot you, that it is unnatural to be this evil. Right.
Right.
And I like that idea of just like, I got my teeth fixed, I clean my nails, and I wake up the next day and just.
So it's a physical manifestation of the evil within.
That's the way I like it. Yeah.
The enemy
yeah.
within.
Well, that's what I always used to think about Palpatine. Like when you see him in Return of the Jedi and he's all like crusty and disheveled, I always assumed that that was just from using the Force. Like his right. 20, like basically for 20 years of being a dark side addict have left him hideously scarred. But then you find out that he caused it himself like a dummy.
Yeah. I don't like that part.
I think that's still open for debate, because in Revenge of the Sith, he has that, I can't hold it.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's talking about the evil within. That's his true face.
Well, so you think right. when he's saying he can't hold it, he's not talking about the lightning. He's talking about his. So you think when he is Senator Palpatine, he is making an effort to keep his, to look human.
Right. The normal guy.
Yeah. Like, I think
guy.
It's almost like. Yeah, and like he's holding all of this evil in, and now he's kind of finally letting it out, and like maybe there's some scarring, but it's also just like, bleh. He just gets to wrinkle and deform, and unlimited power, I'm out.
It's kind of like
sheave out,
and he spirals away. It's kind of like in Tim Burton's Batman, where the Joker wipes his face and wipes off some of his makeup, but it's really him wiping makeup on himself because he's really Jack Nicholson colored in real life. And so it's that's what that's like.
Got
it's just
it.
Like Layers. That. Come on, guys. Yeah. It's just like that. But wait, something you just said reminded me. Oh, I do like the idea of bringing it back to an 80s movie for a second. I do like the idea of like a Groundhog Day, like combine Groundhog Day with like a
Weekend at Bernie's.
Well, not quite. More like a, I don't know, one of those kind of Taming the Shrew type of movies. So you get, you know, like every day Snoke wakes up and he tries to make, like, he gets his teeth fixed and like does the whole, like, looking at himself in the mirror, putting on a different outfit, like getting his, you know, like putting his toupee on. Like, and at the end of the day, he's like looking good, you know, puts his sunglasses on, goes to bed, wakes up, and he's just back to normal Snoke. Like, no matter what he does, it doesn't take. And each time he just tries it, you get a little musical montage of him doing it over and over again. And eventually he just gives up. He's just like, I'm just going to sit here and wear a robe and poop in this chamber all day. I'm not going to move.
I like the idea of the outfit montage, the 80s outfit montage showing mm-hmm. him in all his different looks.
Right.
I like it.
You need
some
kind of...
Maybe all of his hat, yeah.
Yeah, assistant or something with him to give him a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
The Praetorian Guards, I assume.
I guess so. Yeah, they don't speak, so they could just be like, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Praetorian Guards, I assumed wrongly.
One thing I learned in the Visual Dictionary is Snoke has some rings, one of which they show a close-up of, and it has an obsidian stone.
Hmm.
That obsidian stone came from the Darth Vader's castle on Mustafar.
Hmm.
And... So there you go. So
is that kind of like when you could get like a chunk of the Berlin Wall or something like that, or like a
you think like by at this point Darth Vader's castle has pretty much been taken away by rabid souvenir hunters.
It's, yeah, totally.
They just gutted it.
Authentic on space eBay.
We do see him on Mustafar in Rise of Skywalker, right?
It's the ruins of the castle are in the background.
Yeah, yeah. Have to keep an eye out for them.
Wait a minute. In Rise of Skywalker,
you remember those little slow motion scenes where Kylo Ren is fighting a bunch of anonymous guys?
Right. Okay.
That's supposed to be. I don't think they ever say it. I think, but it's auxiliary ancillary materials.
Mm.
Yeah, it's very much Mustafar.
Yeah,
very much. That's the shirt that I got last time I went there. It said very much Mustafar.
One thing I do like that Snoke does the "It was I" speech,
right?
Which I think is something that is sorely missing from the Rise of Skywalker. Well, speaking of which, I wish he had pointed out all the things he'd been doing along the way to make this happen.
Yeah, and he does what he says. Like, it was I who bridged your minds.
Yeah,
which A is it? Really? Are we taking him at, are we believing him? Is he just lying to kind of, you know, influence them? Which I believe a lot of what he says might be lies just to manipulate them. But if not, then when and how and what's going on and where am I?
No, I think he's telling the truth. I think this is his villain reveal moment. Like he's got James Bond tied up and now he's going to tell him the whole plan moment. I think it's exactly what he's saying of it's the classic overconfidence of the bad guys thinking that connection will of course lead to weakness.
Right.
Rather than connection will lead to strength, which he finds out the hard way in just a few minutes. I think it tracks really well of, you know, he's disappointed in Kylo for real, but he's making Kylo feel even more lost and alone when he's saying, you know, you're not Vader, you know, you can't kill the light, you're just a child in a mask, and now I'm going to link his mind and he's going to whine to this Jedi I want to kill. And she's going to see some connection with him. And then, you know, she'll come to me and I can get Luke and then I don't have to be afraid anymore. Snoke doesn't say that part out loud, but I think that's what's going on. And then, for me, I like that idea of like Snoke absolutely did bridge their minds initially, but then they're connected through the dyad, which is why they remain connected at the end of Last Jedi, even though Snoke's in two pieces.
Right.
Or more.
Yeah.
He's his own personal dyad.
So the other further question is, is Snoke doing this because it's his idea, or is Palpatine basically making, you know, having him do this. Does Palpatine want Kylo Ren and Rey to be together? Or I lost track of the.
I think.
Yeah, no, this is.
He needs the power.
Yeah. Palpatine needs a strong force body to possess.
Okay.
He wants that to be Ben Solo, is absolute petty revenge for the Skywalkers. So I think early on when he finds out that Rey exists and she's a powerful force user, like, hey, great, if I can get her. Well, no, I'm going to concentrate on this Ben Solo kid. And, you know, I think he's really consistent between Last Jedi and the beginning of Rise of Skywalker. Rey's fighting for the light side. He wants her dead. And he wants to possess Ben Solo, and Leia ruins that in Rise of Skywalker, so he pivots to Rey.
But isn't Rey his granddaughter?
Yeah, but he doesn't give a damn about that. He just wants a powerful force user to possess. Ideally, it's Kylo.
Yeah.
So everything Last Jedi works. He wants Rey dead because she's a threat.
Yeah.
And he wants Luke dead. You know, he's afraid that Luke will survive and not just be powerful, but will train other people like Rey. So he wants Rey dead, and he wants Ben Solo miserable. So he'll agree to being
the
basically Palpatine.
Yeah.
And that's all going along great. That's why at the beginning of Rise of Skywalker, he's like, hey, Ben Solo, you can have everything you want. You can finally, you know, get out of the shadow of Vader and accomplish what he could not. Just kill this annoying Jedi for me. And that's all going along great until Leia and everybody intervenes. Leia and Rey intervene to turn Ben back to the light. And we even have that little exchange between Palpatine and Pride saying, the Princess of Alderaan, you know, messed up my plan, but I can fix it. And right. Then he pivots to trying to turn Rey.
That is, to be fair, that is classic Palpatine of having multiple plans that seem to contradict each other, but that.
Which I think means. Down the end. That there are, he's just taking credit for stuff as it happens. None of this is his plan. None of it is what he wants. So same with, you know, Snoke. Snoke is just sitting there like, yeah, it was I did that. I bridged your mind so you could talk to each other, which makes it seem like he has more power and he's in control of things and gets them to second guess themselves. So he's just like, yeah, I did that. That was me. And that's,
I do like that he says he stoked their bond. I like that Snoke stoked. I'm trying to think of other, one more word we could put in there.
Right.
But
cloak?
Nothing.
No.
Cloak.
Poke? I poked his tortured soul.
Stroke. There you go. He says, with the cruelest stroke, I stoked your... Snoke stoked it with the cruelest stroke. My stupid note for that was the cruelest stroke is Julian Casablancas. So that's... I don't know, like I find myself questioning whether or not I like the idea of, and sorry, Joseph, whether or not I like the idea of Palpatine being involved in all this. Cause I did kind of get, as much as I got caught up in the excitement of that reveal at Celebration of like, guess who we got back for this movie? And like that, you know, and liking the replacement of, you know, well, we need a big bad guy. Like, guess we got the original big bad guy. Like, although not original in the, I don't know. As much as I like that kind of progression, I also just kind of like that, like, we had moved on and this was a separate thing, you know, and it kind of,
yeah,
I don't know. It does make it like we've spent the whole episode, you know, it's questioning Snoke's motives and what the plans are, and that's not a bad thing. Like, that gives us, you know, hey, it gives us an episode to make. But but also it's an interesting, I'm not sure, this week has made me unsure of myself and my feelings, and I'm not saying it's your fault, Joseph, but I'm saying that didn't happen in several previous weeks. So
we made it halfway through the movie and only now have you broken.
Let me try to fix my errors, if at all possible.
I'm not saying it's an error. I'm just, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing for me is, like, I want to engage with the story that ultimately gets presented. Like, it's an interesting conversation to just talk about what happened behind the scenes. But for the most part, eventually, the stories are the stories. And I want to engage with the stories. And, like, when I think about it, like, a 10-year-old right now who just sits down and watches the original trilogy when they start watching Return of the Jedi on their iPad, they're not like, well, if Gary Kurtz would have blah, blah, blah. Like, they're not connected to the behind the scenes. They're just engaging with the story that's there. And so for me, like, I try to engage with the story that's there. And I see all these connections and I love Palpatine and a lot of it really, really works for me. But to your point, as you're wrestling, if Snoke had just been, he's another Darksider from the unknown regions, I would have been happy with that story if it was told well in my estimation as well, you know?
Yeah.
When Last Jedi first came out, I was never big into the, he's Ezra Bridger, you know, he's he's a, you know, a clone of, you know, Darth Plagueis's thumb. Like, I always just thought he's another Darksider. And I was perfectly happy with that. And if the story had remained that, I would have been happy with that.
Yeah. Mm. My money was on Tarkin, but then that didn't happen. And it's okay. I'm not angry at the movie about that. Like I said, I do really enjoy these movies. And so I'm not, you know, it's not affecting my enjoyment of them. I'm just questioning what are my expectations? That's how much they've been undermined. Yeah. I don't even remember what they are or what they should be.
You're like Luke Skywalker.
It was Snoke who confused your mind.
Yeah.
You're like Luke at the end of Empire. Like, why didn't they tell me? What?
Right.
Sorry. Well, anything else for minute 99? We do have a little bit more Snoke tomorrow.
I just wanted to celebrate the line, the cruelest stroke. I really love that line. I really like, you know, Last Jedi, I think in general has a lot of, it's well scripted in terms of the dialogue for sure. It's, you know, thoughtfully written. Every line and every word feels considered. And I really like that there's this choice to make Snoke be, you know, a big over the top villain and say big over the top pulpy villain things, like, you know, he's like, it could have been, and then you'll die, you know, but I'll kill you with the cruelest stroke, which sounds like an awesome Ramon song to me. It just, you know, have this idea of like, what is the cruelest stroke? It sounds extra awful and I love it.
Yeah, he's way more flowery and poetic than Palpatine, which I like. I like his just kind of hammy villainousness.
Yeah, yeah.
So good. Well done.
All right, then. I guess that'll wrap up minute number 99, last of the double digits.
Mm.
And how about this? I will promote the Star Wars Minute Listener Society today. It's our online Facebook group. You can go there and...
What up, Swimmels?
Chat with like-minded fans and singles in your area and, you know, talk about Star Wars for a bit and your fan theories and all that stuff. So go to Facebook, the Star Wars Minute Listener Society, and
StarWarsMinute.com/Facebook. No, yes. StarWarsMinute.com/Facebook.
StarWarsMinute.com/Facebook.
Star Wars.